Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Our program is devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who have come to know that all of the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, they're rotten to the core, they cannot be fixed. If you would like to engage in this discussion, you're welcome. You're invited to do so. Our toll-free number is 877-300-7645. On Fridays, it is my pleasure to welcome the foremost expert on Islam in the world today. His name is IQ Al-Rasuli. He's written two books on Islam, Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. IQ, good morning. I have five questions for you this morning.
Wow.
The questions are very easy to answer, at least to come up with an informed approximation. How many Americans in America have contracted Ebola and have died from Ebola?
As far as I know, two.
None. The answer is actually none. There are two Americans in America that have contracted Ebola in America, and neither one have died of Ebola.
Okay.
The individual who died of Ebola was a Liberian, and he contracted Ebola in Liberia. And the two religious missionaries who contracted Ebola and were flown into America both survived the disease. So the number of Americans who have contracted Ebola in America and have died of Ebola is zero. How many Americans outside of America have contracted and died of Ebola?
As far as I know, none.
That is the right answer, none. How many Americans in America have been confronted by Islam and have died as a result of Islam?
Tens of thousands.
Yeah. How many Americans outside of America have been confronted by Islam and have died of Islam?
Again, tens of thousands.
Right. So my next question is to you, since everyone seems so concerned about Ebola, and no one seems concerned about Islam, why do you think it's the case that Americans are frantic about a virus that has not claimed a single American life, and they're absolutely panicked or absolutely ignorant of a disease that has claimed tens of thousands of American lives?
Because the administration, Obama administration, and the media are creating the panic situation, because in my not-so-humble opinion, Obama wants to create martial law.
You know, typically when I hear that kind of thing, and it almost smacks of conspiracy, I would laugh at it. I won't in your case because I respect you too much. But there is an aspect of Obama that lends credibility to that conclusion. And that is that in all of his speeches, he presents himself as the de facto world leader, as the de facto expert on all things, as the savior and protector of all that he values, and as the great warrior against all that he opposes. And since his economic views and his political views are almost universally dictatorial, it is certainly possible.
Look, I didn't say that because I don't believe it. I said it because I believe it. Every action taken in the last 6 years by Obama was to diminish America. Literally.
Correct. Correct.
Every action. And yeah. He is not the great leader.
Politically, economically, you name it.
Everything. Is socially,
healthcare.
Racially, theologically, you name it, he destroyed it.
Yes. Correct.
Okay. He has absolutely no, there is no respect for him anywhere in the world. And I have checked this again and again and again. Okay, they say, yes, Mr. President, but he's useless. Why? Because he put red lines, which became pink lines, but become zero lines. Nobody respects a man who cannot keep his word. If and when I make a threat, and if I say that you cross this line, I will destroy you. And I don't. I lost the game.
Yeah, my view is that ultimatums are never wise. I think that the so I disagree with him issuing the ultimatum, and of course I disagree with him even more if you issue an ultimatum, reneging on your own ultimatum because it makes you look like a spineless fool. But the fact is that the best way to confront the foremost enemy in the world to humankind, which is Islam, is to speak the truth, and to speak the truth boldly and bluntly. And this man is probably the world's most egregious liar and apologist on behalf of the most deadly disease to ever infect humanity, Islam.
Because he's a Muslim, irrespective, even if you disagree with me. Mm-hmm. I have never changed my mind, and I will never change my mind. He grew up a Muslim. He honestly, truly believes, because I don't think he ever read the Quran, by the way. I don't think so. Because any human being with two brain cells of logic and a bit of decency, reading the Quran chapters 2 to 9, no more mm-hmm. than 2 to 9,
correct,
cannot come but to the conclusion that it is the most disgusting, despicable scripture yeah. ever created by human mind. And it was created by the human mind, Muhammad.
If you read in chronological order 8, 9, and 5, that would be sufficient. Wouldn't take that much. Just 8, 9, and 5.
That's less than an hour.
Less than an hour of your time. Right?
Yeah. But very few people do that. Very few people in Congress have read the Quran. Mr. Peter King, he makes statements about Islam. He has investigations. He never read the Quran.
Correct.
Otherwise, no. He would not have spoken about extremist Muslims or radical Muslims or to radicalize Muslims.
Right.
That's bull crap.
Completely. Yeah, there is no such thing as an extremist Muslim. There's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. There's no such thing as radicalizing a Muslim. Islam is Islam. There are five sources on Muhammad and his creation of Islam that were committed to writing within 250 years of his death. Only five. And those five tell you 100% of what can be known about Muhammad, Allah, and Islam. And those five are the Quran, which, by the way, without the hadith, particularly the two chronological compositions of hadith, is an absolute useless document. It cannot be followed. It cannot be understood. And so with the addition of the two chronological texts, one is called the Sirah, the biography of Muhammad, compiled by Ibn Ishaq. It's available through Oxford Press under the name The Life of Muhammad. And the history of Islam's formation is called the Tariq. It is compiled by Islam's foremost Quranic scholar, Tabari. And those two are the only chronological depictions of Muhammad's words and deeds compiled and put into writing within 250 years of his death. There are two other hadith collections that have merit in Islam, but they're topical arrangements. One is by Tabari, the other is by Muslim. That's it. There is everything else that is said about Islam that is not contained in those five sources is poppycock. It is absolute opinion and unfounded speculation.
Yes, but these five literally display what Muhammad was.
Correct.
The most despicable bipedal that has ever walked the face of the earth.
Yeah, he was a sexual pervert. He was a ruthless terrorist. He was a mass murderer. He was amongst the most repulsive human beings to have ever lived. And that's not our opinion. That's not a jaundiced view of him. That's not a racist statement. It's an accurate assessment of what can be known about this man from the five oldest sources. And
this
it's irrefutable.
This is why I always said, and I repeated it many times in my radio talk shows, mm-hmm. It is by divine will. We're not discussing whether God exists or not. I just use it as a metaphor.
Okay.
It is by divine will that the very hadith that explain to the followers of Muhammad, his Quran and his Sunnah, are the very same that discredit Muhammad as a prophet and
correct.
The alleged divine origins of his Quran.
Correct. Yeah, it's amazing. First of all, if you didn't have the hadith,
you have no Quran.
While Islam would not exist as a religion, and you would have the Quran, and the Quran could not be followed, it could not be understood, and it would just be a book of utter conflicts without any way to abrogate those that were replaced by newer revelations. The fact is, if you just had the Quran is, by any rational assessment, the worst book ever written. It has no context. It has no chronology.
I'm the only one who said it. Many great people who studied the subject said exactly the same thing, even 300 years ago.
Of course. Well, it's so obvious. The book, all books, are presented in one or two ways. They're either presented by context or they're presented by chronology. Is the Quran ordered by context or chronology?
Neither.
It's just a jumbled mess, isn't it?
Talent.
Right. Good books are not plagiarized. Is the Quran plagiarized?
100%.
Yeah. Almost everything that is quasi-rational in the Quran was plagiarized from the Babylonian Talmud. The Quran claims to be written in pure Arabic. Was there a written language of Arabic when the Quran was revealed?
No chance. No.
The alphabet of Arabic, the Arabic alphabet that comprises the Quran, it's Hebrew, isn't it? Yeah, and every important word in the Quran, including Quran, is of Hebrew origin, isn't it?
Again, it's correct. There are 118 words in the Quran. They are the most important expressions in the Quran.
Yes.
Not a single one of them is Arabic.
That is correct. They're all Hebrew, and the Quran claims to be pure Arabic. The Quran has how many accurate prophecies proving divine inspiration?
Below zero.
Zero. The Quran has how many scientific revelations that were unknown at the time that it was revealed that have subsequently proven to be true?
Zero.
The Quran has how many scientific blunders like the sun going to bed in a money spring at night?
Oh, maybe 100? Maybe 100 pieces, yes.
The Quran has how many accurate depictions of ancient history in the area to prove that it had divine inspiration?
Not a single one.
How many errors, like, for example, having the Egyptians be involved in crucifixion, does the Quran have?
Oh, good question. A lot. Quite a few of them.
Yes. Are there made-up words in the Quran that aren't extant in any language?
Yes. Muhammad made up some words to fit his prose.
Yeah.
Actually, created words to fit his prose.
By any standard, and we will continue this analysis, the Quran is the worst book ever written. That's a statement of fact, not opinion. Welcome back to Shattering This. We're having a conversation with IQ Rasuli, who is the foremost expert on Islam. And what IQ said is something we're going to return to in a moment, which he said is that the hadith, which comes in four principal flavors. There is the two topical arrangements by Muslim and Bukhari, and there's the two chronological arrangements by Ishaq and Tabari that are collections of sayings from Muhammad chronicling his deeds. And what IQ said is that they are absolutely essential for Islam to exist as a religion. There is no Sharia law. There is no Islam as a religion. Without these hadith, and the Quran cannot even be understood without them. And yet it's those same hadith that destroy the religion. But what I wanted to prove beyond that is that the Quran itself is the worst book ever written. So if you only had the Quran, you would have a religion based upon the worst book ever written. So let's continue our analysis of the Quran. The first 90-some-odd chapters revealed chronologically those that were revealed in Mecca. My assessment, IQ, was that there was a single theme amongst all of them, which was what I call the never-ending argument. That was the Meccans calling Muhammad a con man, a liar, a demon-possessed fool. And Muhammad responding on behalf of his God, saying that my God's going to torture you in hell for saying that. Is there any other substance to the Meccan surahs?
None whatsoever. It was a defensive, the whole thing. The first surahs in Mecca were everything to do with Muhammad, everything to do with Muhammad's wives, everything to do with Muhammad's personal life. He was literally writing a story, part of his autobiography, but projecting it into the mouth of Allah. The unsuspecting mouth of Allah and the unsuspecting mouth of Gabriel to give them right. an aura of dignity, sanctity, or divinity. Yeah. But it's all about himself.
The only place I would, the only thing I would disagree with you on is just a matter of significance or degree. I think that the Medina surahs are even more self-serving and even more autobiographical than are the Meccan surahs.
I don't disagree with you. Mm-hmm. But these original surahs was to defend himself against the very tribe that he belongs to, who they knew. These tribes, they were pagan tribes, they were illiterate people, but they knew that he was a charlatan.
Now, I would ask you this question, IQ. Is there anyone alive today that knows Muhammad better than did the Meccans who lived with him?
No chance. Absolutely none.
Right. And what did the Meccans universally say of him?
That he is a terrorist, that he is a pathological liar, that he plagiarized everything from somebody else. That's it. That's enough. You don't need more than that.
Correct. And Muhammad's only response, he never issued a single prophetic statement that would prove inspiration. He never revealed anything that that would prove that he had scientific or historical knowledge that they did not possess. All he did is to say, my God's going to torture you for making those statements.
Absolutely right, yes.
So at very best, the first three quarters of the Quran, in terms of numbers of surahs, as they revealed chronologically, is nothing more than a playground rant between belligerents.
Yes. Well, they were, in fact, the pagan Arabs, the Quraysh, they were not his enemies. He was their enemy.
Correct.
He was the one who started the war against them.
Correct.
They were only defending themselves, and they were decent people, because they could have killed him at any time, but they didn't. They honestly believed that he is a possessed person by the jinn, and they should ignore him. But they shouldn't have ignored him. They should have killed him.
They should have. That is absolutely correct. In the Meccan surahs, before we leave the Meccan surahs, is there any redeeming moral insight that is provided in the in these surahs, which represent over 80% of the Quran?
I don't know what you mean, but
is there something like, you know, if you read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, almost all of the moral statements that have become part of Western law have their basis in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It's an extraordinarily moral perspective on the world, and the insights were unique to it. Is there any such comparison in the Quran where there's some...
None whatsoever. You don't have to continue. Not a single item.
Okay. In the Meccan surahs, did Muhammad admit that there were more gods than just Allah? Allah, Manat, and Al-Uzza come to mind?
When he failed with the satanic verses, yes, he admitted.
Yeah. Did he also say that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan?
That I don't remember.
Yeah, he actually did. And it's confirmed in the Quran that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan, because he claimed that his satanic verses were, in fact, the inspiration of Satan. Admitted it. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths, Covering Conversation with IQ. Al Rasuli, the foremost expert in the world today on Islam. We've just finished our review of three quarters of the Quran, the Meccan surahs. Let's move to Medina. The first surah revealed in Medina, although it's hodgepodge, it's a bunch of surahs all called one, is the second surah. It's named the Cow. The principal theme of the second surah, IQ, by my recollection, is that by moving to a community that practiced Judaism from one that practiced kind of rock idolatry in Mecca, is that it's just anti-Jewish. The enemy of Muhammad ceased to be Meccans because he was no longer in Mecca, and the majority of the people there practiced Judaism, and the second surah labels the enemy of Islam Jews.
Well, to start with, to be fair, when he moved to Medina in the year 622, the first 16 months, he ordered his followers to pray towards the Temple of Solomon. Mm-hmm. But what happened is that he wanted the Jews to say that he is the messenger of Allah. that he is the prophet of Allah. And they refused. Okay. So he turned against them. By the way, before we continue, I would like our listeners to how that hadith prove how despicable he was. Mm-hmm. In the battle of Uhud, which is the second battle after Badr, when the Meccans had the upper hand, the Abu Sufyan, the leader of the Meccans, challenged Muhammad to a duel. Muhammad hid among his own people, and he told Umar ibn Khattab, do not tell him I'm alive. You see, these are in the hadith, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not creating them. Yada is not creating them. They are in the hadith. And the hadith are unbelievably accurate in the sense of describing who and what Muhammad was. A despicable human being.
Yeah.
Another deception. In every Quran, only in the 20th century, they write the Holy Quran on the back on the front of the book. Never in the history of Islam was it called Holy Quran. It was also always called Noble Quran. Al-Quran al-Karim. Al-Quran al-Karim means Noble Quran. But to deceive unlearned people in Islam and to make it equal to the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, they said Holy Quran. That's only in the 20th century.
Yeah.
Back to you.
Yeah, it's that when you move to Medina, the Quran takes an entirely different tactic. It's like it's two entirely different books. In Mecca, Muhammad did not have any henchmen. He didn't have anyone who was willing to impose his will violently. But on the way to Yathrib, today's Medina, he encountered 12 Arab tribal leaders, and they pledged to go to war on behalf of Muhammad against all mankind. And so from that point on, the Quran takes on a war standing. All of the surahs revealed in Yathrib, today's Medina, are a declaration of war against all humankind.
Correct, but we have to add, why those people, the 12 leaders, would go against all human beings? Because they were promised a paradise if they die for the sake of Muhammad and Allah.
Correct.
A whorehouse version of paradise.
Correct.
Whereby the shaheed, the one who dies, or the martyr, the one who dies killing and slaughtering innocent people because they don't believe in Muhammad, they will have the 72 virgins, they have unlimited food, unlimited drink. The very wine that they were prohibited in life on earth would be the rivers of wine in the afterlife.
Yeah. That's what the equation one of the depictions of the Islamic paradise actually has it be homosexual. And it talks about there will be no shame in the act of homosexuality, and that it's boys that become the virgins to be conquered, which is it's a very interesting aspect of Islam, is that in Islamic countries, pedophilia, men against little boys, is prolific.
By the way, it's called al-wildan al-khalidun. That means the young boys who are forever young, to be raped by the shaheed, the one who goes to heaven.
Right.
Al-Wildan al-Khalidun. It's in Arabic, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
What Yada and I are telling you, I know that it sounds outrageous. I know. He knows also. Mm-hmm. But it is not outrageous. We're not telling you lies. All you have to do is Google what we're talking about. We can give it to you in chapter and verse.
Right.
It is despicable.
It is.
It is the most outrageous belief system the world has ever known. Hitler compared to Muhammad is like the Mother Teresa.
It is true. Now, Mother Teresa was not a nice lady, but nonetheless, Muhammad is easily the most despicable man who ever lived. By any moral standard, he is the most despicable man who ever lived. He was a pedophile. He was incestuous. He was a rapist. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper. He was a ruthless terrorist. He was sadistic. He was an avowed liar. I mean, you can't find any redeeming quality about Muhammad. He was just despicable. And
this is why ISIS and all other so-called radical and extremist Muslims, they are neither radical nor extremist. they are following to the letter exactly Muhammad's Sunnah, what Muhammad did, how Muhammad behaved. Why? Because they truly believe that Muhammad was the most perfect male that was ever created. So if the most perfect male is so disgusting, they are exactly the same. They are clones of Muhammad.
Yeah, the Quran tells Muslims that they have to follow Muhammad's example, but and Islam preaches that Muhammad was the most perfect man who ever lived, and yet the only sources that chronicle Muhammad's words and deeds, his behavior, his character, compiled within 200 years of his death, all depict him as being sexually perverted and a mass murderer, a terrorist, a slave trader, a kidnapper. Everything that we would define today as criminal and revolting, he was. We're not making this up. This is what the only credible sources have to say about this despicable man. Mayer and Harris are continuing to make headlines because they're liberals, and they're liberals who spoke correctly of Islam. And I would like to just run down some statements about Islam, and what you tell me if it's valid or not. Are Muslims instructed to kill anyone who criticizes the religion?
Of course, instantly.
As a matter of fact, there's a trial right now taking place in Pakistan. There's one almost every week in Pakistan of somebody who said something about Muhammad, who is been convicted to die.
Yeah, but mostly are so-called Christians. They are accused of being Christians who are speaking against Muhammad to justify killing them.
Now, by the way, how do you criticize somebody who was a pedophile, rapist, slave trader, kidnapper, terrorist, and mass murderer and thief?
The word is not criticize. You're actually revealing the facts, and that's what they want to destroy you.
Yeah, that's right. The truth is the most lethal thing there is to Islam.
Absolutely.
Does the Quran tell Muslims to kill any Muslim who abandons the religion?
Instantly, again. They do it every day.
Right.
I mean, they do it as we speak every day.
So how could Islam be good if the Quran itself tells Muslims to kill anyone who rejects the religion?
The irony when you have a so-called moderate Muslim telling the world, but the Quran says there is no compulsion in religion. Really? If there is no compulsion in religion, why kill somebody who leaves Islam?
Right. And why, if there's no compulsion in religion, does the Quran and the Hadith order Muslims to either decapitate, kill through decapitation, someone who will not convert to Islam, or treat them in such a way that that their entire life, their wealth, their property, their rights are completely obfuscated, where they have absolutely no reason to live? You either kill them or give them no reason to live. Why does the Quran say that if there should be no compulsion in religion?
Because 99% of humanity, including Muslims, don't know that there are abrogating and abrogated verses in the Quran, which in Arabic, al-nasikh wal-mansukh, which means that verses revealed to Muhammad later in his life overrule, overturn, and make null and void verses that were revealed in Mecca.
So, for example, there should be no compulsion in religion was revealed before the verse that says, and by the way, it was said because the Meccans were practicing a different religion than Muhammad, and Muhammad didn't like the Meccans imposing their religion on him, and that's why he said it was from that perspective, not the perspective of imposing Islam. And once Muhammad got jihadists who were able to impose their will over the civilians surrounding Medina, then he changed his tone. And at that point, you either converted to Islam or you died.
Correct. And they've been doing it for 1,400 years.
Right. So it's simply a matter of...
You watch it on television, ladies and gentlemen. You watch it on television. What do you think ISIS is doing?
Right. Well, by the way, let's just say that there was no such thing as Quran 2:106, which is the first of the two verses on abrogation, which is throwing away that which was previously revealed that's in conflict with that which is newly revealed. A book which contradicts itself, does it not prove that it's not to be trusted?
Well, especially if a book says that it was God revealing it.
Yes.
any God by any definition, we've got to repeat these things even to the simple minded people. A God by definition is omniscient, means he knows everything. So if he contradicts himself, he cannot possibly be God. It's that simple, it's not complicated. Yeah. And the Quran is full of contradictions. 71% of the surahs of the Quran have abrogating and abrogated verses, means contradictions. 71%.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? 71% of the book proves that it should not be trusted because it contradicts itself. Do Muslims have a propensity to terrorize the world, and did they promote their religion through terror?
Of course. Muhammad said that Allah gave him victory through terror.
So when Bill Mayer...
Under the shade of swords, that's terror.
Right. When Mayer and Harris said that Islam was the motherlode of bad ideas, and we recognize that today Islam is responsible for 99% of the world's terrorist acts, you would think that most people, informed and rational, could make that connection and say, yeah, there seems to be a problem.
Yes, but most people are not informed or rational.
Yes, that is correct. And that is the biggest problem of all. We'll be back and talk more about the very things that comprise Islam and why, in fact, it is the mother lode of bad ideas. IQ terrorism has become synonymous with Islam. Muslims have a monopoly on it today, committing 99% of the world's terrorist act. But is terror a corruption of the religion, or terrorist extremists, or was Muhammad a terrorist?
Muhammad was a terrorist. He corrupted the humanity. It wasn't the other way around. By the way, people who are listening, I would like them to know something. There is no human being on planet Earth who can debate in public yada and win. It doesn't exist. I say it because it's true. I say it because Yada knows it's true. And I say it because the opponents of Yada and myself also know that to be true. That's why they never debate us, ever. Yada challenges them, I challenge them. Debate us, in public. If we are wrong, humiliate us. But they don't. Because we are always telling you the truth. We are telling you the facts of life. It's up to you. All you have to do, as Yada said a few minutes ago, Google the Quran, read chapters 2, 5, and 9. That's what you need to do.
I'd read 8, too. 8 is one of the most despicable stories in the Quran. 8, of course, is the... It's Muhammad's first terrorist raid. He had nestled himself up there in Yathrib. He was desperate for money, desperate for a victory, so he sent his goons out, and they laid in wait and terrorized a civilian caravan. And murdered many of his former neighbors, his tribe. Those he didn't murder, he kidnapped. He robbed them. He gloated about it. And he established terrorism as the tactic in Islam. As a matter of fact, when you talk about the Islamic State today, plundering, kidnapping, and enslaving, and selling girls off as sex slaves, that's not a corruption of the religion. Muhammad did exactly the same thing.
Not only are they doing the same thing, but even the decapitation, the mutilation of the dead bodies done by ISIS was done by Muhammad. Exactly the same at the Battle of Badr.
Right. And even worse, in Yathrib, with the Quraiza Jewish tribe, he decapitated 600 to 900 men and boys in one afternoon.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Islam is Islam. This is the irony. Erdogan, or they call Erdogan, the president or prime minister of Turkey,
right,
chastised the leaders of Europe. He said, what the hell are you talking about? Moderate Muslim, extremist Muslim. Islam is Islam. And he's telling them the truth.
Right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, we're trying to say that that it's extremist Muslims, radicalized Muslims, who are abusing women. And raping them and then selling them as sex slaves. But didn't Muhammad do exactly the same thing?
Yes, but he wasn't an extremist. He was a terrorist. They are following his sunnah. They're not doing anything wrong from their point of view. On the contrary, it's the Western mind which doesn't accept what these people are doing as related to the Quran. It is exactly what they are doing is exactly what is being instructed in the Quran and Hadith.
If I was a Muslim man in Pakistan and I raped a 5-year-old girl, who would be punished?
The girl.
That's right. And talk about a ridiculous religion. Do women have any rights in Islam?
Yeah, a bit higher than a domestic animal.
It depends on what country the domestic animal is kept. My guess is that domestic animals in America are protected with more rights than a woman is in an Islamic country.
That's for sure. Not only in America. In Europe is the same.
Yes.
But not under Islam. 750 million human beings, females of Islam, are treated one little step higher than domestic animals. None.
Yeah.
No freedom, nothing.
In the world today, there are 250 women who were sexually mutilated as little girls. About 90% of them are Muslim. Do you think there's a correlation between Islam and the sexual mutilation of little girls?
They are identical. It is because of Islam.
All right. Does Islam sanctify lying?
Of course. Taqiyya.
Yeah.
Taqiyya is in the Quran.
Right.
It tells the because it's religiously sanctified deception.
Right.
That a Muslim can sit down with a Christian or a Jew or anybody who's not a Muslim, especially with a Christian, he will eat pig's meat, which is prohibited. He will drink wine, which is prohibited, for as long as in his heart of heart, that is in his truth mind, is deceiving the Christian until such time that he can destroy him.
Correct.
This is it. That's it.
The Quran also sanctifies killing and stealing, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
In addition to plundering, terrorism, kidnapping, and enslaving.
Yeah.
All of these bad behaviors. The Quran actually endorses the very behaviors that we are witnessing in Syria, in Iraq, and around the world being perpetrated by Muslims.
100% guaranteed.
Yeah. It's the source of all evil.
You take care.